This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. Our radio show is heard on Pacifica stations nationwide, and our TV show can be viewed on Free Speech TV and on our website. Within weeks of taking office, Donald Trump has revived the controversial tar sands pipeline project that President Obama had canceled in response to massive public opposition. The Keystone XL pipeline was slated to transport dirty tar sands from Alberta, Canada, diagonally across the continental United States to refineries in Illinois and Texas. Mass actions in Washington, D.C. against the pipeline in 2013 were the biggest environmental protests in the history of the nation, and brought together diverse groups of people united by their opposition to the project. When Barack Obama finally ended the project in 2015, it was hailed as the movement's biggest, most tangible victory. Is all of that in jeopardy now under the new administration, one that has stuffed oil and gas executives into its cabinet? Joining me to help answer that question is Sarah Burt. She's a staff attorney with Earth Justice. Welcome to the program, Sarah.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So anytime we talk about this administration's positions on oil and gas, we should remind ourselves that our State Department head is, our Secretary of State is Rex Tillerson, the CEO, former CEO of ExxonMobil, you know, basically this giant, gigantic transnational oil and gas company. I understand that Tillerson did recuse himself from this decision, but really, did he? I mean, just because he didn't directly author the decision and present it, was presented, I understand, by the deputy secretary, does that mean that he has no influence on approving a pipeline?
Well, it's been clear from early on in Trump's candidacy, you know, before he was even elected, that if elected, he would approve the pipeline. And so, you know, Trump has signaled his intention to reverse Obama's climate policies all along. The fact that Tillerson is head of State Department, I think, is certainly indicative of where Trump's sympathies lie. The fact that Tillerson recused himself as a formal matter is, I think, appropriate, but I don't think it really radically altered what the administration was planning to do all along.
So let's remind ourselves of why people were opposed to this pipeline in the first place. I mentioned the tar sands in Alberta, Canada. That's the wellspring of fossil fuels that this pipeline project, if built, would transport to refineries in the United States. How deep would its impact be in the short term on communities living along the route and in the long term on our climate if it goes through?
Well, the impact really would be significant. And I want to sort of start at the top of the pipeline up in Alberta and mention first that tar sands crude oil is not just any old crude. It is the dirtiest fossil fuel on the planet. It requires more energy to extract tar sands crude oil than any other type of fuel. It requires more water. It just, you know, guzzles up resources in a way that is hugely detrimental to the climate. And what this pipeline will do is it will facilitate ongoing and increased production of this dirtiest of fossil fuels and will allow the transport of that toxic fuel across our entire country over freshwater and groundwater sources that are essential for communities living along the pipeline route. It goes over the Ogallala Aquifer, which provides water for millions of people in the upper Midwest and in the central states. The pipeline will run within a mile of thousands of wells, private wells that people use for their drinking water. And it will run near waters that tribes use as part of their, on their reservation as part of their traditional lands. So
this is like the Dakota Access Pipeline all over again.
It is like Dakota Access Pipeline, you know, and then, you know, to continue the pipeline down, once you get to the refineries, because this fuel is so dirty, when it goes through the refining process, a lot of those toxic pollutants are released in the refining process into the air and into the water. So for the communities around the refineries, and these are vulnerable communities who are already overburdened with pollution in their neighborhoods, they will see increased pollution from the refining process. And the kicker is that none of this oil is, well, not much of this oil is slated for use here at home in the United States. Almost all of it will be used for export. So, you know, communities along the pipeline route, communities around the refineries will bear the brunt of the pollution that this oil causes without any of the benefits. And of course, we all bear the consequences of allowing increased production and refining of this type of fuel in terms of the climate impacts, now, which are significant. You know?
Sarah, when conservatives push these projects, they tend to de-emphasize the impact that you're talking about and instead talk about them being good for the economy and that the cancellations of these pipelines have the potential to hurt the U.S. economy. Trump basically touted the creation of American jobs as justification for both the Dakota Access Pipeline and the Keystone XL pipeline. I'm seeing now that the Keystone XL pipeline would create a grand total of 50-something permanent jobs in the United States. What can you tell me about any economic benefit from this pipeline?
Yeah, the argument about providing jobs has really been overstated. You know, as you said, the number of permanent jobs that would be created by this pipeline are, you know, in the double digits. So this is not in any way a project that will increase jobs. In terms of the economic benefit, as I said, much of the oil is for export. It's not going to have a dramatic effect on oil prices at home. So really, the economic impact is in lining the pockets of the oil companies and the oil services companies, the pipeline companies, who want to be able to charge the oil companies to use this pipeline. So the economic impacts economy-wide are very limited. Whether it's beneficial to a few sort of corporate owners is debatable. But certainly for the folks in, you know, up and down the pipeline, they're not going to see any economic benefit from the Keystone XL pipeline.
So Donald Trump and Rex Tillerson's friends and colleagues are the ones that are basically going to benefit. I mean, Sarah, I remember the enormous amount of blood, sweat, and tears from tens of thousands of people around the country that came together for protest after protest and culminated in the 2013 demonstration in Washington, D.C. About 50,000 people or more gathered there, making it the largest climate march in U.S. Climate mobilization in U.S. history, all of which led to President Obama making the right decision to cancel this pipeline. How deep is the disappointment today, and what are the prospects for victory a second time round? I mean, it seems as though there's very little hope these days under the Trump administration.
Yeah, I mean, from a climate and even a public policy perspective, this decision makes absolutely no sense at all. The only sense to be made is that it is a decision that the oil companies want to see made. But as you said, there is tremendous support across the country for climate policies. I think recent polling showed 75% of Americans want our government to pass regulations that will protect our climate. And so pitting climate against jobs is simply comparing apples to oranges in this case. There was huge disappointment at this really baseless decision. It is signaling a step in the wrong direction in terms of climate policy. And, you know, it is also wrong as a matter of public opinion. You know, Americans want to live in a safe environment and with a safe climate, and this is not the way forward.
So at this point, I'm sure environmental organizations like yours are scrambling to try to plan out strategies for opposition, although of course it isn't a surprise. I mean, it's absolutely predictable. Trump promised to revive the pipeline, so I'm sure many organizations were already preparing for this. I know that there's a People's Climate March happening on April 29th in Washington, D.C. That's one major mobilization that's in the works. But what are ways in which people can Basically, this is a fight for our existence, right? So what are the ways in which people can contribute towards that fight at this point?
Yeah, I think the upcoming climate march is a great opportunity to really show in a very tangible way public support for policies that'll protect the climate. I think that congressmen and women are feeling a lot of pressure, and so continuing to be, you know, making your voice heard, letting them know that you want your government to stand up and make sure that you are regulating in such a way that we're going to reduce our impact on the climate and protect our communities from the impacts of climate change is also very important. I know that many environmental groups, many community organizations, many tribes are looking at legal challenges to this reversal. And so we'll see how that goes. But I think that the real driving force on Keystone XL has been the public campaign, the public uprising, showing real opposition to these antiquated fossil fuel based infrastructure projects that are really just keeping us mired in the past and are preventing us from moving forward and finding solutions.
What's the next steps for the administration to put the project into action? Are there legal avenues, political avenues for people to oppose the pipeline? Will Congress have any say in this pipeline project?
Well, there are still a number of steps that have to be gone through before this is all done. Significantly, Nebraska, the state of Nebraska, still has regulatory approvals that need to be put in place. And without those, the project cannot go forward. And that can take, you know, another 8 months to a year. We also know that there's significant opposition by landowners along the pipeline route in Montana and in South Dakota.
So potential lawsuits.
And TransCanada will try to take private land in order to build this project, and they, you know, I know
that's
landowners
a Canadian
will
company,
be fighting
but,
them.
Yeah.
So landowners will be fighting them with, you know, with lawsuits. And then, as I said, you know, the public outpouring of opposition to this will be an important aspect as well. So the project is far from done and in the ground. There's still a ways to go. And so I am, you know, I'm hopeful that we will get to a better decision and stop this pipeline from being approved.
And of course, every step of the way that it has to go through the process of approval is an opportunity for activists to try to stymie the process. TransCanada is the Canadian company that would run the pipeline project, by the way. And Sarah, give out a website for Earth Justice where people can find out more information about the work you do and possibly hook into your activism.
Yes, you can just go to www.earthjustice.org, and there's a ton of information there about our work on climate, our work on renewables, including our work on pipelines.
Sarah, thank you so much for joining us today.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Sarah Burt is a staff attorney with the group Earth Justice, and we've been talking about the Keystone XL pipeline. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.